You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello there. My name is Rob Harvilla, and I host a Ringer podcast called 60 Songs That Explain the 90s, which is self-explanatory, except we're up to like 110 songs now. It's a long story. Katie and Nathan asked me to tell you that they use foul language on this show. And if you don't care for profanity, maybe this ain't your bag. But in this case, it's all swearing in the service of praising Tina Turner. And curse words used to praise Tina Turner magically become quite sacred words via the sainted transitive power of Tina Turner. Okay, more profane than any language Katie and Nathan use today is my mercenary capitalist urge to take this moment to add that I also have a book coming out on November 14th, also called 60 Songs That Explain the 90s, also with more than 60 songs in it. There's like 120. I can't explain that either. Yeah, check it out. Okay, that's enough. Enough of me. On to Katie and Nathan and Tina. Thank you. Enjoy.
Hi, this is Katie.
And this is Nathan.
And you're listening to Queen's Podcast, the show about badass women in history. Nathan!
Hey, Katie!
Hello! You know what I'm dying to talk about today, Nathan?
Oh, I already know, because we left her off on part one, and I have been dying to hear part two, because, ugh, it's gonna be so much better, guys.
It's Tina, bitch!
Yes!
Nathan, where did we last leave Miss Tina Turner?
So she is a huge music star, but she's been in this abusive, controlling relationship for 16 years with this dude named Ike. Maybe you've heard of him. And finally, in Dallas, Texas, she's had enough. And she dramatically spins across the highway to freedom.
Yes! #FreeTina! Pretty much right away. She does not waste any time. She files for divorce. I love this about Tina. I feel like consistently throughout her life, she knows what she wants. And she gets it. And when she decides, I want a divorce, like, she's filing.
She's done.
She's done. Now, if you remember, they were on tour when she left him. And so she's refusing to work with him anymore. Like, in no way, shape, or form. And so she's canceling the tour. And since it's Tina's refusal to work that cancels the tour, she's the one that's financially responsible for the broken contracts.
Ooh.
And, yeah, so she's just that done that she's like, I don't care. I'll figure out a way to pay it back. Whatever.
So Tina just knew that if she fought, that she'd have to spend more time in court, more money to do all this shit.
You have to see his fucking face.
Ugh, I don't want to see his face anymore. I wouldn't either. Yeah. Come on. And the more time she spends in court, she has to, like, physically see him. And so she's tired with even being in the same room as this man. So she accepted the entire financial responsibility of canceling the tour dates.
Have you ever been like that? I was thinking the other day, one time I broke up with someone, and they technically owed me like $200 because we were like on the same cell phone plan. Back then, I mean, $200 is a lot of money, but back then $200 was a lot of money to me. But I was just so done that I was like, what the fuck ever. Have you ever been in that kind of just like, I just need to get out of this situation?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You're like, I'll cut my losses.
Yeah.
I think that's the term that you use.
If $200 like, is what I had to pay to be done with
to
that
be
man.
In this relationship. Yeah, I'm at $200. Take your money, whore. Yeah.
But if you'll remember, Tina doesn't have a fucking dime to her name. We talked about in the last episode, you know, in the 70s, women didn't necessarily have financial freedom in relationships. Men owned the banking accounts. So even though she has been busting her ass, working for 16 years without a break, remember she like worked right up until she gave birth? She does not have a dime to her name to show for it.
Oh, this is the whole thing back in the day. You remember RBG? You know, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, that was her whole fight, was to get women to have open up bank accounts, to have credit cards in their names. And when they went to court, she said she didn't want financial support, which most people in her shoes would ask for alimony.
I'm not going to lie. I'd probably ask for alimony. She deserved it. It's not her fault that none of the shit was in her name, but she was just so done with it. She's like, keep your
mind. Yeah, but she knew that if she let Ike continue to see himself as supporting her, then he'd somehow manage to weasel his way in.
Snake back in, back into her life,
Toxic, abusive relationship. You have got to cut those ties.
Yeah.
Do not let them have any say-so in your life, because they've had too much to begin with.
100%. So she told the judge, all I want is my name, which is so beautiful. Because remember, Ike had, I can't remember if it was trademark or copyright. I don't know the difference. He had legally owned the name Tina Turner. And she was just like, all I want is my fucking name. And Ike was like, no, I trademarked that or whatever. But the judge was like, looking at, she is Tina Turner now. She has been Tina Turner. And so she got her name. How beautiful is that? That's so poetic to me.
Yeah, it's almost like the girl gets her name. So she also asked for her two cars.
Her two Jags.
She got the two cars and her name, bitch. And
That was it. And I mean, they made a shitload of money as the Ike and Tina Turner review. So yeah, like walking away with a famous name and two very expensive vehicles, you would think, oh, that's a win. But like on the grand scheme of things,
it was not a win. That wasn't a win. But I think she chose it because she knew, okay, I just got to walk away with this with the bare minimum. With what I,
if I got to start from scratch on my own terms.
She basically said, what I want is my name and a couple cars.
And she got it. And she's like, okay, I'll go from here.
Yep.
Now, I wish that we could tell you that Tina walked away from that courtroom and was an overnight sensation as a solo act. But sadly, that's just not how things went. In fact, the first 2 years after she left Ike, she was on food stamps. Nathan, can you believe that? If you're not in the United States, food stamps is like government assistance to buy food because you're like below the poverty line. She's one of the most famous women in the world, and she was that low income. Isn't that wild?
That's crazy. After their divorce was final, Ike said, hey, let me help you out.
Oh, how nice of him.
So he got her a house, paid for the first month's rent, and then left all four of their kids with her. He said, after a month, thanks, bro.
Thanks.
So that's why we were here, is I'm a babysitter.
Yeah.
So he said, after a month, you'll be coming back to me anyway. What? Excuse me, what?
She was like, LOL, thanks, bro. That is not happening.
Yeah, he was just like hell bent that she was going to be returning, but that's
well, I think, I mean, I think that's what a lot of people thought back. He's like, you're not going to be able to make it on your own. Look, you're at the poverty line. You'll be back anyway. You're going to see how hard it is with the four boys.
That's so sick to be like, hey, I'm super abusive and I'm going to make you suffer more to realize that my abusiveness is better
than being alone. But she took the boys, and you have to remember, two of them were not biologically her children. Mm. She adopted them, but she was like, they were my children though. So I think that shows how ride or die she was for those boys. You know, she's just like,
well, I mean, she was responsible for them.
And in her book, she never said anything about complaining about being the sole caretaker of the kids. Though, to be fair, one of them, they were all teenagers at this point, so they weren't babies. They were like, the oldest one was like 18 and the youngest one was like 15. Yeah.
Oh, but she had all them kids and refused to ask Ike for any sort of child support.
Yeah.
She's like, okay, I got this. I don't need him. I got to get to work.
You better work, bitch. But that's easier said than done, because every time she tried to get into a meeting with a record company, they were just like, where's Ike? It's not the Tina Turner review. It's the Ike and Tina Turner review. They just were like, we're not seeing you as a solo act. Because she was almost 40, which back then in an industry like the record industry, she was basically a corpse, you know?
Yeah. Remember her best friend, Rhonda, from episode one? Nah. Rhonda decides to move into the house. And she's like, okay, Tina, until you can get a real manager, I'm going to try to help you get back on your feet, girl. So let's think of some ways that other, quote unquote, washed up celebrities because you're only 40. Right now, that's like the golden age.
I know. But yeah, she was considered like a nostalgic act. But like, how are these?
Yeah,
other...
so now that you're nostalgia, let's get you some money, bitch.
Yeah, let's figure out how other nostalgic acts are making money. So do you remember in our Betty White episode when we talked about how popular it was for celebrities to go on game shows in the 70s and 80s?
Oh, yeah, Betty White was the queen of game shows.
And Tina was like, I can do that. She went on Hollywood Squares a few times, but even in her first episode of Hollywood Squares, they're like, where's Ike? And it's so awkward. Because, I mean, obviously, people knew they were going through a divorce.
They know, yeah.
It's they're like, where's Ike? And I watched this video of her just going, she's so graceful, too. She's just like, I don't know. And just left it at that. And I was like, good for her for not.
I would have been that person that would have been like.
Probably doing coke.
Like,
yeah.
I would have put his
making
ass on blast.
Making some other woman miserable now since he did have 14 wives in his lifetime.
Ooh, so I don't know, as the answer is very kind.
Yes, that was more graceful than I think I would have been. Yeah.
So at this time in the late 70s, lots and lots of celebrities had their own variety shows. Like, we had the Johnny and Marie Osmond show, we had the Sonny and Cher show.
Or just the Cher show after Cher left Sonny.
Yeah, and then we had Carol Burnett, like that's another one that just had their
own
variety show.
She's hitting the circuits of all those as well. Funny story, when Tina turned up to the Cher show before getting into her costume, Cher was like, what the fuck are you wearing? Because now that Tina isn't being controlled by Ike, when she's not on stage, she's going to dress what she's comfortable with. Because Ike would, like, even when she's not on stage, make her wear sexy outfits. But if the press was going to see them. But when she is now coming into her own, when she's just doing her own thing, her preferred outfit is a pair of linen slacks, a silk blouse, and a string of pearls. And so she rocks up for their first rehearsal. And Cher is like, what are you wearing? And she's like, Tina Turner's a character. You know that, right? And Cher was like, oh...
But because Tina was such a different person when she wasn't in costume or on stage, she dressed conservatively. She didn't like curse. She was very modest. She didn't do drugs or drink. I mean, maybe a glass or two of champagne every now and then. Yeah, but that shocked people.
Yeah.
That she was so reserved and not as wild as they thought she should be.
Exactly. So for the first few years, Tina is taking any gig she can get. She is slowly dragging herself out of that debt with no help from Ike, which really pissed Ike off because his career was going nowhere. his reputation had really taken a hit. To bring it to contemporary, it reminds me a bit of Chris Brown. A little bit. Like how his reputation, even though he's talented, his reputation and his temper and his history stop him from getting jobs. And it was the same thing with Ike, because he was getting a reputation in the music industry for having a really bad temper and for being violent and for having a drug problem, which all of these were true. So no one wanted to work with him.
Obviously.
Ike Turner was a talented dude. Let's not get it twisted. He was. Talent only gets you so far when you're an absolute asshole, you know? When you are a liability to society.
So we don't have time to go into all the details, but on more than one occasion, I tried to strong arm Tina into at least working with him again.
This is so scary.
He'd send dudes that were on his payroll to go stand outside her house with guns to threaten her.
What the fuck? Just so she'd look out the window in the house that her children also live in. His children also live in. One time they woke up to gunshots and Tina tells her kids and stuff like, go hide in the closet. And her and Rhonda hold up until daylight and they go and look outside. They had shot out the windows in her and Rhonda's cars.
What?
Like, what the
That fuck? Is...
How fucked
Beyond
up.
Beyond abusive. That is like, I'm going to kill you.
Yes! When she called the police the first time, though, they thought it was a prank call. Because wouldn't you, too?
We got a call from Tina Turner. Ike's shooting out the window.
Yes! Until finally she was like, can you just, for the love of God, send somebody out to this address? And when they finally showed up, they were like, oh shit, you're Tina Turner. And she's like, I know.
I've been saying it this whole time. I even got my name in court.
Oh my God. There's this story in her book about how she bought a gun. She, you know, she's a Buddhist. She doesn't want to own a gun, but she thought she needed it for the protection of her and her own family.
Ugh.
Yeah. Like, it just drove her to be absolutely paranoid, which, blah.
So, hey.
Hey.
Let's not talk about Ike Turner.
I don't
want to
talk about Ike Turner anymore.
for like the rest of the
episode. Almost the rest of the episode. Let's not talk about Ike Turner anymore. Let's get Tina back where she belongs on top.
Yes.
But first, let's take a quick break and we will be right back to let you know how the rest of the story goes.
Hey, y'all. Spooky season is here. And if you're looking for a show to whet your appetite for a little haunted history, then I'd like to invite you to check out Southern Gothic, a chart-topping history podcast that explores some of the most infamous legends, folklore, ghost stories, and hauntings of the American South. We've covered all sorts of stuff from the Bell Witch of Tennessee to the disappearance of the Confederate submarine, the H.L. Hunley. Not to mention our deep dives into the local lore of some of America's oldest and most haunted cities, like New Orleans, Charleston, and St. Augustine. So, if you're ready for a little good old-fashioned Halloween storytelling with a commitment to quality historical research, then be sure to check out Southern Gothic today. It's available now on all your favorite podcast apps.
Have you ever wished that you had a direct line to your pediatrician to ask them all the questions that constantly crop up while parenting? Well, we hear you, and we have been there too. That's why we launched the Bites of Health podcast. Every morning, we'll answer a commonly asked pediatric question in 5 minutes or less. You can tune in while you're making your second cup of coffee or from the school drop-off line. Who are we? I'm Dr. Jess Steyer, a public health scientist and also co-host of the Unbiased Science podcast. Every day, I'll chat with one or both of your new pediatrician besties, Dr. Dina DiMaggio, a general pediatrician, and Dr. Anthony Porto, a pediatric gastroenterologist. We'll talk about all the things related to our kids' health, from dealing with a colicky infant to navigating puberty in the teenage years. So be sure to tune in to Bites of Health, now live on all podcast platforms.
Oh, we're back. And Tina's also back and making a comeback because no one would really sign her. And she couldn't really get a good agent. God bless Rhonda for trying.
God bless Rhonda for trying. But I'm sure Rhonda was even like, I'm not equipped for this, you know?
I don't know what I'm doing. And she's in debt right now. And Tina starts a cabaret act, which,
Tina. Oh, we're theater kids. But yeah, you're right. She is in so much debt, like up to her eyeballs. So she does this act and she takes it on the road. And y'all, this woman is hustling. She performs in the same month, in 1 month, in 1977, she performs Australia, New Zealand, Vegas, and Texas.
Every day she's hustling.
Every day she's hustling. I feel like I need a whole month to recover from flying to Australia. Like,
and I know. I need a month just to take a shower. No, I'm kidding.
Do you know that Lady Gaga interview where she's like, no sleep, next club, another club? No, do you know what I'm talking about? This part of Tina's life is the Lady Gaga next club interview. No sleep, next club. You know what I mean?
Yes. So in 1978, she performs in USA, Germany, UK, Canada, Spain, and Italy. She is not turning down a single fucking show, guys. Like, not a... Did someone cancel in Michigan? Call Tina.
Call Tina.
Someone cancel in Munich? Call Tina.
Yeah.
She is working her ass off, but she still can't get an agent and can't get proper representation.
I went back and forth about mentioning this because it's always such a bummer when someone we love does something that's not cool. During this time, she did also perform in South Africa during apartheid, which was like most Western artists weren't going to South Africa and standing up against apartheid. Later, she would say, oh, I regret it, but I didn't really understand what was going on, which I'm like, yes, of course you did. Everyone knew what was going on. But I also kind of feel like she had mouths to feed. It wasn't cool that she did that. And it's her explanation for it later wasn't necessarily made any sense. But yeah, I feel, don't you hate like when someone you love, it's like just about any historical person you love. You're like, oh, my God, they're so cool. And then you're like, oh, no, how they treated the Jewish people.
I mean, it's true, though.
Yeah.
It's so true. You're always like, oh, I wish she didn't do that.
At least she did say she regretted it later, though.
Yeah. So now we're going to fast forward a little bit zip, to 1981, which was the year that all this hard work that she had been doing finally paid off. Yes, that means it was 5 years of her taking literally every single gig she could get for it to finally pay off. She was doing a solo show at the Ritz in New York City. I mean, putting on the Ritz.
Putting on the Ritz.
Okay, theater kid.
Yes. The show was gaining so much traction that like celebrities were starting to come to it. And one night, Keith Richards, who she had toured with previously from the Rolling Stones, he goes to watch her show and he comes to her room, her dressing room afterwards, and is like, girl, you can still perform. Like, whoa. And she was like, what do you mean I can still perform? I haven't stopped performing since I met you in 1964 or what the fuck ever. You know, she's like, what the fuck are you talking about, Keith Richards?
I'm snapping. If you can't hear that, I am snapping for the queen performer.
I'm sure she was happy to see him, but still, it's like, what do you mean still? Like,
still. Yeah. So he comes by the next night with his friend, David Bowie. Maybe you've heard of him.
Maybe you've heard of him. Little known indie project, David Bowie.
And David Bowie is blown out of the fucking water. He's like, why? What? What? Why have you been hiding this woman? What is she doing in the backgrounds? Why has she been performing? And she needs to be a star.
Yes. And she's like, I haven't been hiding anywhere. I have been on the stage nonstop on every continent in the world for the last 5 years. And David Bowie is like, okay, well, I'm having a party tonight. And you're coming. And
if David Bowie invites you to a party, you go.
You go to that party, my friend. Yes. At this point in her life, she wasn't a big drinker or partier. I mean, like, when would she have the fucking time?
Yeah.
The way she wrote about this party in her book, it sounds like she just really got to let her hair down. She talks about they were drinking champagne and smoking cigars and playing the piano.
Love it.
With Mick Jagger, David Bowie, Rod Stewart. A who's who of 1981 rock stars.
Gosh.
And she was the toast of the entire party. She was the belle of the fucking ball because everybody had been at her show. It was like an after party for her show.
Oh my God, can I flip my hair? If I was in a room with Rod Stewart, Mick Jagger, David Bowie, I'd be like, are we having a group orgy?
But David Bowie was literally like, and they become friends for the rest of their life. But at this party, he's like making calls being like, why doesn't this woman have representation? Why are y'all sleeping on Tina Turner? And she was like forever grateful for him. Yes, David Bowie. Of course. Why were people
finally
sleeping? Yes.
Finally, someone's listening. And just like that, she gets representation.
Yeah.
Maybe whenever there's some masculine energy, shit gets.
What masculine energy with David Bowie are you fucking talking about? I mean, I know he was a straight man, but he's not exactly. Have you seen The Labyrinth? Like.
I mean, he's kind of one of the first non-binary-ish
people. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, where he's like, hey, let me throw on some makeup and let's have a good time.
Whenever people are like, back in my day, rock stars were just he, him. And I'm like, have you seen David Bowie in anything he ever did?
But things for Tina take off from there. That same year, she's on SNL with Rod Stewart.
Have you ever seen this performance, Nathan? I love it so much.
Yes, the hot legs.
Yes, which what the perfect person, because if you don't know anything about Tina Turner, she's known for her hot legs. And so Rod Stewart goes on SNL and performs Hot Legs. Who's he going to bring on? The hottest legs in the industry, Tina Turner. And she, like back in the early 80s, you know, teenagers were turning on SNL. It was very much like for the young crowd. If someone's like 16, they might not necessarily remember Tina Turner. So they're probably like, mm-hmm. who is this badass lady up here with the legs? And so she got exposure to like the next generation because of this appearance with Rod Stewart on Tina Turner. And it was fucking awesome on SNL. And it was fucking awesome.
So things start moving really fast for her after that. So okay. she gets a manager named Roger. Roger ends up signing her to a label, and she starts putting out music, and she's making even a bigger splash in the UK and in Europe, but the momentum is slowly building and building and building and building.
I'm sure she's like, finally, you know?
Yeah, it's about damn time.
She releases a dance mix cover of, you know, Al Green's song, Let's Stay Together.
I don't, but I would love you to sing me a Sarah.
You know the Al Green song, Let's Stay Together. Of course you do.
Yeah, I probably do.
She puts out a dance mix of that. To everyone's surprise, it blows up. And it's number 3 on the dance charts. And everyone's yes. like, shit, we need to build on this momentum. Because this woman is 44, so she's dying tomorrow. We need to...
Spoiler alert, she's not.
She's not. They're like, we need to capitalize on this while she's still hot. We need to get a record out while she's still marketable.
Mm-hmm. And in just 2 weeks.
2 weeks!
2 weeks, they record her album, Private Dancer.
I'm a private dancer for money.
So they release Private Dancer.
Dancer for money.
April 1984, that's when that happened. And 1984. And oh man, is this a bop? Is this a single? Is this a record? Yes, queen.
Yes.
It was a huge hit. And it was like the 39th best-selling album of the year.
Yes.
Which is enormous. I think there's a bunch of them are up at the top, but one of my favorites at the top is like Jagged Little Pill, Alanis Morissette.
Yeah.
She's like in the top 10.
No. Yeah.
But to make it as like the 39th best-selling.
That's the 39th best-selling album of the year in the U.S. That's not the dance charts. That is the just across-the-board best-selling album. That was in the U.S., but in Europe, y'all, she's in the top 10 albums for sales in Germany, Norway, Switzerland, Denmark, Australia. I know Australia's not in Europe, but like, it's just so much bigger outside of the U.S., even though she's huge in the U.S., you know?
Yeah, and it reaches its heights in the U.S. at number 3 yes. on the billboards, and that's huge. That's everything.
Yeah.
That's top song in the country.
Yes.
She and Ike had never imagined that kind of chart power.
Ooh, right. Chart power. Big chart energy. how jealous do you think Ike was?
Oh, 100.
Yeah, so Tina doesn't write songs. She's not a songwriter. She's a performer. Mm-hmm. So her label, in a rush to get this album out, they recorded it in 2 weeks. They're having songwriters come to her, and she gets the final say. She gets to say, yes, mm-hmm. I do want to do this song. No, I don't want to do this song. And so they bring her this song called Physical. Do you know the Olivia Newton-John song? Let's get physical.
Get physical.
Physical. And so she passed on it. Because she was just like, ugh. Which I feel like could you imagine the Tina Turner version of Physical?
I can't, because honestly, like, the song Let's Get Physical was so innocent sounding.
Yes, that's
from
the thing.
Olivia Newton-John.
Because Olivia Newton-John has like that, yeah, that innocent. That's a great way to put it. Kind of like just that very like naive. She doesn't realize that she's being sexy. But with Tina Turner, it would have been like, let's get physical. You know?
Yeah, it would have been a different vibe.
It would have been almost like raunchy. And so that's what she was like, no. Roger, her manager, was also Olivia Newton-John's manager. So they were like, okay, and they brought it to Olivia Newton-John. And it was a huge hit. I think that's so funny. Could you imagine if things had gone differently?
Also funny is that they brought her a song called What's Love Got to Do With It? And Katie can't help herself.
I can't.
I know. And Tina actually said,
no, thanks.
Hard pass. What? But Roger was like, no, honey girl. No, I want you to give this a try. And she said, okay, It's a ballad. I don't sing ballads.
Girl after my own heart.
And she said, you wouldn't bring a song like this to the Rolling Stones. Why are you going to bring it to me?
Because she's a rocker. She's like, I'm a rocker like they are. Why would you bring me this? And Roger said, I am so confident that you can put the Tina Turner spin on this and make it your own. Just try. I think you could kill it. Just try. And I'm so happy she did. I love that song so much.
Because it does need that raunchy edge.
Yeah.
Like, it does need that gritty.
Yeah.
Like, that gritty, what's love got to do?
Got to do with it.
Yeah, you need that soul in it.
And
she's got that.
Fun fact, Tina Turner hated that song her entire... She hated performing it. She hated it. But it was her biggest hit ever.
No, I'm like, I know you hate it, Tina, but can you sing it for me one more time? Plus,
yes.
What's Love Got to Do with It won 2 Grammys, one for Record of the Year and one for Best Female Rock Vocals.
Yes.
And then another song on that album won Female Pop Vocals. So she's killing it, baby.
She's back. Yes. So let's just do a little bit of skimming over, like, her musical achievements and her tours, because there's just too much to go over. She is in demand, is what you need to know. And she is working in the music industry and just blowing up and just for the rest of her life, she's in demand and just blowing up. So let's talk about some movies.
She tells Roger, hey, I had so much fun making that weird movie, Tommy, back in the 70s. I want to do another one. And then right away, he's like, got you a role. And Steven Spielberg comes to her and says that he wants her to do a role in The Color Purple.
I've never watched The Color Purple, but I know it's a lot of trauma, right?
It's not fun.
Yeah. And I know it's Oprah and Whoopi Goldberg. And I believe it's Whoopi Goldberg is the character who's in an abusive relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And then her husband leaves her for a singer or something like that. Is that the... Mm-hmm. Tina was just like, people already associate me with an abusive relationship. I don't need to be, I don't need, I, it, she was just like, it's too real. It's too.
I can, as much as I would have loved her to have that therapeutic moment of being able to go through that on
film. I don't
think
she wanted to go through that in front of people.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, she needed her own time to do that, which is empowering, right? That's like, take your time, baby girl.
I don't want to do something sad. I don't want to be a victim in everybody's eyes. I want to do something empowering, something fun. And so Roger went back on searching on a role for her and came back with a script to the third movie in the Mad Max series. It's called Mad Max Beyond the Thunderdome. I've never seen any of the Mad Max movies, not even like the reboot either.
I've seen like one and it was fun. It was fun, okay. But never again. I love you guys if you love Mad Max, and I'm sorry. But she was offered the role of Auntie Entity, a post-apocalyptic ruler.
Hey, you know, in the last one, she was the acid queen, and this one, she's a post-apocalyptic queen. She's being typecasted and she loves it.
Yeah, she's here for it. The character's strong, kind, intelligent. I mean, hello, I'm here for it.
Yes.
And when the writers were writing the script, they kept saying, we want like a Tina Turner adjacent character to play
type.
The role.
Yeah.
And never in a million years did they actually think they would get Tina Turner, but they manifested that shit.
The moral of the story is shoot your shot. They were like, a Tina Turner type role. Just ask Tina Turner. And she was like, fuck yeah, let's do this. The film did... It wasn't a huge commercial success, but it did okay. But the way that Tina talks about the experience is that it was just she didn't give a shit that it wasn't winning a bunch of awards, because she just had such an amazing time. Like, she got to be this like powerful woman and wear these wild costumes, and she got to grow and do her own stunts. And like, Nathan, let's have a look. Click on that link there. Let's have a look at this outfit that she got to wear in this movie.
Gorgeous, honey.
Yes, and I'll definitely post it in the on our Instagram.
She looks like a warrior woman about to take on the world and say, nope, I'm conquering you.
That costume has been so heavy, though. And out there in the desert in Australia. But
what are those baby hairs doing around her forehead?
Oh, that was she had to shave her head every day for this wig.
Oh, my God.
For this wig. Yes. But, how awesome does she look? Yeah.
She looks like she's about to tear you down.
So, yeah, she didn't care that the movie wasn't, a huge commercial success. She just wanted to do something different, something empowering, and this just, hit the spot for her, which I loved.
And 1985 was a huge year for me and Katie, and also for Tina, because we were born.
We were born.
So Tina put out her first memoir, and it was so personal. Yeah. It was called I, Tina. And y'all, it put Ike Turner on blast.
To 11. Blasted him to 11.
People have been whispering about Ike's abuse for years. And since she had her comeback, reporters have been straight up just asking her, hey, did he abuse you?
Rude.
And it's I'm still dealing with this trauma myself.
She thought, okay, if I talk about it, people will quit asking me, which was wrong. People asked her about it for the rest of her life. But the book was such a huge success. It was number one bestseller all over the world. It was huge, huge, huge.
And she was vulnerable in every single way. And she'd never gone that place before.
Yeah.
When people saw her, they saw her as this over-the-top, confident woman. But she got to tell the story about her parents abandoning her. And she got to tell the story about how she never felt loved. And it was this therapeutic moment for her.
Yeah. This line from her book really breaks my heart. She says, "The fact is, I had no love for my mother and father from the beginning, from birth. But I survived. To tell the truth, I haven't received real love ever in my life, believe it or not. People look at me now and think, what a hot life I must have lived. Huh, I've never had a real lasting love, but I've survived on my own."
Mm.
That's so sad.
That is.
Yeah.
But she's a survivor.
She is. She's coming up on her 50s. But that is so sad, though, to be almost 50 and being no one's ever loved me. Not even my parents, you know?
Ugh.
Yeah.
Her book was a huge success, though. And she got rave reviews. Though there were people that criticized her for harming Ike's name like that. Ike's life had not been great since she left.
Yeah.
So people were like, hey, why kick him when he's down? And it's he kicked me for so many years. So fuck that guy.
Yeah, I don't feel super sorry for Ike. No, there was, do you know the This Fucking Guy music producer, Phil Spector?
Oh, yes.
He was really vocal about being Tina has ruined this man's good name. And it was I think he has ruined his own good name.
Yeah, he did that himself.
He did that himself, yeah.
All on his own.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
10 years later, Ike wrote a book back, in rebuttal. And he said, sure, I slapped Tina. We had fights. And there have been a few times where I punched her to the ground, but I never beat her.
Wait, what? Okay. What is your definition of beating?
My man. If, punching someone to the ground sounds
that's beating.
Okay. Anyway.
Wow.
Anyway.
So in 1993, the book was turned into a movie called
What's
Her Least Favorite.
Love got to do, got
her
to
Least
do
Favorite Song to Perform Ever. I don't think we'll be reviewing this one because don't want to watch it again. It's just painful.
If you're new, we will often over on our Patreon review movies. We reviewed the Selena movie, we reviewed the Aretha Franklin movie, stuff like that. I don't want to watch this movie again. It's a categorical bummer. Everybody does an amazing job, though. Everybody.
Yeah, and Angela Bassett does an amazing job. Lawrence Fishburne, amazing job. It won a bunch of awards, got tons of money at the box office.
It
is a great movie.
97% rating on Rotten Tomatoes, which I don't know.
I mean,
there's not a whole lot of movies that have that high of a rating. So it is a good movie, but it is hard to watch.
Yeah, Tina herself said she never watched it all the way through because she didn't want to, like, go back through that trauma, seeing her as the victim.
She said that she thought that they portrayed her... She was like, I fought back more than that. She was like, I'm too much of a victim in that movie.
Mm.
She says, I don't understand why they made the changes to make me look weaker than I was. I don't think she wanted to be the poster child for domestic abuse. But in the 90s, people weren't talking about domestic abuse. Like they, I mean, up until 1995, it wasn't considered legally rape to rape your wife.
That's so hard to think about.
So I think she should be proud that it brought the conversation of domestic abuse into everybody's household. Do you know what I'm saying?
No, absolutely. Like that became... not taboo to talk about.
I mean, it was still, like, it was still kind of, but like, people were talking about,
She brought light to it. It wasn't in the shadows anymore.
But I bet there were probably people that watched that movie and saw like what a big success she was now and been like, oh, I should just leave.
I can do it too.
Yeah. So I think she should be proud of that. Too. I don't know if she was, but I think she should have been.
Anyway, Tina needs to fall in love. Yes. And I think she needs some like, real love.
Yes.
So let's take a quick break before we get to that real love.
Real love. I'm searching for the real love.
Everybody shush! William Shatner has something to say.
Cat and Jethro, box of oddities.
What do you do when the woman you love dies? Well, of course, you dig her up and you live with her.
Aww.
The show examines weird things.
There are plenty of old photographs from this time period of children out in the streets playing in and among the dead horse carcasses.
Oh, I miss those days. Things used to be so much simpler.
Cat and Jethro.
Then there's the urine wheel, which sounds like a really bad game show.
Thing done weird things. Cat and Jethro, box of oddities. That is really mysterious.
Join Cat and Jethro Gilligan Toth for the strange, the bizarre, the unexpected, as they lift the lid and cautiously peer inside the box of oddities.
The Webby Award-winning Box of Oddities podcast from Airwave Media.
I'm Helena Bonham Carter, and for BBC Radio 4, this is History's Secret Heroes. A new series of rarely heard tales from World War II.
They had no idea that she was Britain's top female codebreaker.
We'll hear of daring risk takers.
What she was offering to do was to ski in over the high Carpathian Mountains.
Of course it was dangerous, but danger was his friend.
Subscribe to History's Secret Heroes wherever you get your podcasts.
And we are back. Let's get this girl who has never felt true love in her life. I think she deserves some love. What do you think, Nathan?
Oh, what's love got to do with it? Everything. Right now it does for her because she's trying to find love.
Oh, she wasn't actually on the prowl for love.
Okay.
I mean,
she wasn't thirsty.
She was a busy bitch. She would later say after Ike, she didn't equate sex with an act of love, which can you blame her? She equated it.
I mean, she's scarred.
Yeah, she made it. She, in her mind, sex was more like aggression, you know? So despite her on stage sexy appearance, she wasn't the racking up her body count by no means.
Yeah, I mean, it was a character. It wasn't her.
Yeah.
One thing she said that was kind of sad is that because she wore wigs every day, she kept her real hair short and sometimes was totally bald. And she was like, I was afraid that a man would go to bed with Tina Turner and wake up to Anna May and just be appalled by what I looked like. Oh,
bless her.
No, we love you for who you are, what you look like.
I know.
We love your energy, not your hair.
But I mean, everyone's like, gonna... Well, I get what she's saying, though, in that, like, they go to bed with this rock star and wake up with just a normal person, you know? And so she was insecure about it.
I bet celebrities feel that way
a
lot.
I'm sure. I mean, I know I do, you know?
Okay, lady, goddamn. I know I do.
Oh, God.
But one day, she met a German hottie who was like 16 years younger than she was.
She meets this guy. Let's set the scene. Okay.
So picture it.
1985 or 86. I don't know. At some point in the 80s. She is still living in the US at the time, but she's way more popular in Europe. So when her record label is like, we want you to come do some tours in Europe, talk about like doing some more business deals in Europe, she's like, yeah, sure, I'm excited. They're like, great, we're going to fly you out. We're having one of the guys from EMI Europe. He's going to pick you up from the airport. Yeah, his name is Erwin. So just be on the lookout for Erwin when you arrive in Munich.
Yeah, so she gets on the plane and she sees Bach standing there waiting for her. And she's just like, Who the fuck is that?
And how do I get a piece of it? Yes, his name was Erwin Bach. So I could. Are you searching for his birthday right now?
Mm-hmm.
Let me know if you find it, because we need to do like an astrological dig. Then, according to Tina, it was love at first sight for her. She was just like hook, line, and sinker right away.
And after meeting a few times, Tina said she did something she had never done before in her whole life. She leaned over to him during a dinner with a bunch of other record executives and said, next time you come to the United States, I want you to make love to me. Oh, bitch.
Oh, that is some big clit energy, big titty energy in the house. But can you imagine if you're Erwin? I mean, if Tina Turner is giving you an open invitation to her bedroom, how intimidating. Like one of the biggest stars in the world, and you're this like nobody, young guy. But next time he was in LA, they spent a very sexy weekend together.
So I did pull it up.
Oh, you found his birthday?
Mr. Erwin is an Aquarius.
Sagittarius and Aquarius. Okay.
That's a fire sign and an air sign. So that's always going to match.
Okay.
So yeah, they definitely had a lot of magic going on. Mm. Lots of fiery chemistry. There was lots of fireworks. So very much going on with them. Ooh, okay. I love this for them.
So they have the sexy weekend in LA.
She got a little butthurt, though, when he didn't call her to make more plans to meet up right away. But I have to wonder, put yourself in his shoes. He's probably thinking, Tina is someone that does shit like this all the time.
Yeah, he's probably thinking she hooks up all the time. Yeah.
Yeah, she's this sexy rock star with this big personality, and this is just another one of her flings. But, spoiler alert, that's not how Tina felt.
No, she was actually in her book. She said that after their weekend together, she was like, she took pictures of them, took like selfies together, and she like printed them up and had them framed. She's like, she was ready to be all in, and he didn't realize. So they didn't jump into a relationship right away. There was a little bit of miscommunication, but eventually, after a few months, they did get on the same page. And that was 1986. And Tina died in 2023, and they were together for the rest of their lives.
Aww.
Or the rest, for rest of Tina's that. Life, yeah.
Sorry, where are we again? Sorry. I was too busy looking up the Sagittarius and Aquarius-like compatibility, and it says that they enjoy their lives with each other, always come up with enthusiasm, enjoy their habits, and overly discussing things. So, yes.
Yeah.
So he proposed to her after being together for 3 years, and Tina was just like, ugh, I've been married before. It's hard bad.
Yeah. Nothing about that was fun. Let's not do it.
Why ruin this perfect, beautiful, happy relationship that we have with marriage?
Right.
Let's just be together.
Yeah. The thing I really liked when reading about their relationship was that Erwin didn't get involved in her career. I was watching this Larry King interview from 1997, I think. And he was just like, well, what does your boyfriend think about your tours and stuff? And she was just like, that's She looked so annoyed, like a bit of like, why would you even ask me about that? That doesn't have anything, you know. He did not try to tell her what to do in any way, shape, or form. He was like, you got this. And
I love this.
I think in juxtaposed with Ike, where he was like controlling what she wore, how she sounded, how she looked on stage and off stage, I think she really appreciated having a partner that was, even though he was in the music industry, he was not trying at all to in any way, shape, or form craft.
I mean, as an artist, yeah, you have to appreciate somebody who's not telling you what to do.
Yeah.
They're allowing you to do it. They allow you to just be yourself,
independent,
and explore yourself. And maybe when you explore yourself, your music will get better. Huh?
Yeah.
Think of that. Love that.
I love that too.
Okay. Let's jump into the 90s because Katie and Nathan are at least 5 or 6 years old.
Yes.
And Tina has been in the show business for like 3 decades now. And she's finally getting inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Unfortunately, so is Ike Turner.
Barf. Yeah. What? neither Ike nor Tina attended their induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, because usually it's a bit of a to-do. Tina, on her behalf, she said, I don't want to be associated, Ike and Tina. I don't want to be there if it's going to be... I think she was grateful to be inducted, but she just didn't want to keep having to hear Ike and Tina and seeing, like, people...
Okay, I will stand up for her all day, day.
Yeah.
Because I am the youngest child, and it's, like, always I get the and Nathan.
Yeah.
And so it's, like, Ike and Tina. It's, like, no, Tina first.
Yes, yes.
And then you can invite Ike and then represent him separately from me.
But they were inducted as the band together, you know? So I get it,
so
but
painful.
I'm sure she also just didn't want to see a bunch of pictures from that time.
No, yeah. Absolutely not. Triggering. Hello.
Ike also didn't attend because he was in prison serving a 4-year sentence for cocaine possession. So... Oh, no! Oh, poor buddy.
Surprise! He's a drug abuser.
Yeah.
And an abuser. And an awful human being. So in 1992, Tina bought a home in France and pretty much lived there full time. Her kids were grown and she'd always preferred Europe anyway. So she told Larry King in an interview, in America... She told Larry King in an interview, in America, Madonna is the biggest female pop star. In Europe, I'm way bigger than Madonna.
Yes.
Bitch.
I mean, she wasn't wrong.
She's not wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's right.
So in 1997, this guy from CBS, for y'all that aren't in the U.S., CBS is a news channel, TV channel, and they have a show called 60 Minutes, a news show. And they come to our house and do the interview. Nathan, have you ever seen any of this interview? Because it's so cringe when you watch it in 2023.
No, I have not.
So they're doing a tour of her house, and this interviewer asks her about if she's had plastic surgery. And I love it. She gives the most awkward and honest answer, but when you're going to ask a fucking rude question like that, expect a fucking awkward answer. She's like, well, yeah, I had my nose done because it was smashed in so much that when I sang, like, blood would come into my throat, so I had to have my nose reconstructed. Do you have any other questions about my plastic surgery?
Oh,
I know, right?
And, ow, like, I'm the interviewer, and I'm just like, ooh, I can't talk to her.
But then he's asking her, because they're looking at her house, click on that link that I have in the show notes, Nathan. Look at these pictures, and I'll put them on Instagram as well, and I'll post to – these pictures are from a article in Architecture Digest or whatever it's called. Look at these pictures of her house in France.
Oh, my God, I am dying.
I know. But the interviewer asked –
can I just stay on your porch?
Yes, can I just live on this patio?
Yeah, I will put a tent up, and you will not hear.
You will not
me.
Even
take
know
care of the
that
whole
I'm
place.
Here.
I will cook you breakfast, girl.
But in that same interview, the interviewer asked her, "Do you think you deserve this?" And she goes, "I deserve more." And
good for her. Good for her.
I have to the first thing that came to my mind when I watched that, I was like, would you have asked Mick Jagger that? Would you have asked Prince that?
No.
They all had big houses. And would you have asked Do you think you deserve this? What the fuck kind of question is that? But what a
I worked my ass off. Yes,
but what a perfect response. I deserve more.
Yes, because she went on tour for years in clubs and clubs and clubs and clubs.
No sleep. Another club. Another club. Yes.
I know. Come on, guys. Like, really? Do you deserve this? Yeah.
I deserve
more than this.
Yes.
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 Bitch. Yes. I love this energy.
Yes.
What? One story, though, that really grinds my gears is that her mom comes to visit the home in France and is just like, it's good. You found another rich man to take care of you. And then Erwin is like, does she think I'm like Ike? Does she think that I'm bankrolling lifestyle?
Yeah, does she think that I'm the breadwinner here? Because clearly she is mistaken. I mean, Erwin had a good job. Erwin made good money, but he was not not South of France mansion money like Tina was.
But I mean, that's like that old mentality of like, oh, you've got a good man.
You got a good man.
And
she's like,
and it's like, no, she's taking care of me.
It's like the Cher quote with Mom, I am a rich man. It's what it made me think of whenever, if anybody doesn't know, Cher has this quote where her mom was like, I just want you to settle down and find a rich man. And she goes, Mom, I am a rich man. Like, it's, Tina was
that's
the
true.
I mean, like, though, I don't have it here in the notes, but I just thought of something from her book that made me so sad. She tells this story because, you know, she had that fucked up relationship with her mom. But she bankrolled her mom for the rest of her life. She kept her mom in a mansion for the rest of her mom's life. And there was at one point where her and her mom were having a disagreement. And her mom brings up this story about how her dad was, like, hitting her one time, and she made the dad stop hitting Tina. And she goes, I saved your life that day. And Tina looks around at her mom's mansion that she lives in and goes, I bet you're glad you did, didn't you? Aren't you? Because, I mean, it doesn't seem like her mom ever appreciated how self-established and valuable Tina was. Do you agree?
No, I do.
Yeah.
She never saw her worth.
Yeah.
She never saw what Tina could actually do. And it's like, you've got the most famous woman.
Maybe be a
as
little
your
bit,
child.
Be a little bit more appreciative. Yeah. But their relationship never got great.
Yeah. So let's do some skimming a little bit.
Yeah.
Tina does a bunch of touring. She does some legendary performances with all of her friends. There's also rumors that she had an affair with David Bowie, which I might as well. she does. I mean, David Bowie's dead, but I mean, we get the picture.
Well, Tina Turner. Like,
it's David Bowie.
Tina Turner is like, sorry, guys, we were always completely just professional friends. We never had. And I'm like, let me dream, Tina.
that night that you were having a party after your performance.
Let me dream.
Making love. Y'all are in love with each other. So she does Live Aid with Mick Jagger.
Yeah. They have the most iconic performance.
Yes. Yes.
She renounces her American citizenship and becomes a Swiss citizen and buys a big mansion in Switzerland. It's giving me Josephine Baker.
Ooh. Mm-hmm. I didn't think about that.
Yeah.
That's... maybe she's Josephine Baker reincarnated.
Maybe.
We never know.
I don't think that lines up with when Josephine Baker died, but
maybe.
I think they were alive at the same time, but maybe.
Maybe there was some inspiration there.
Maybe.
Tina's also honored at the Kennedy Center.
Yes.
So she's inducted into the role. She's inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as a solo artist.
Love it.
She's friends with Oprah.
Yes.
Everybody gets a car.
Yes.
And
it's a Juggler. 12,
and it's a Grammy. Everybody gets a Grammy.
You get a Grammy.
So she held the Guinness Book of World Records title of concert with the most attendees from 1988 to 1997.
She had the biggest concert in the world for almost 10 years. That's awesome.
Yeah, like, she performed with Beyonce. Like, we think now, we're like, oh, it's Beyonce. It's like, no, back then it was, oh, it's Tina Turner.
Do you remember when we did the Patreon episode about, like, the gossip like the drama that Aretha Franklin started.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember how Aretha Franklin got so butthurt that Beyonce called Tina Turner the queen?
Oh, yes. I remember that.
And Ike Turner died of a cocaine overdose. And Tina said that she felt when he died, she finally forgave him because she felt so removed. Like whenever he died, it stirred absolutely no emotion within her. No grief, no sadness, no happiness, no celebration, like just nothing, which is the opposite. What's the opposite of love? What's the opposite of hate? Apathy.
Apathy.
And that's what she felt. Apathy. She was just like,
and
I can
see that from her perspective. Is that she dealt with him while he was on cocaine and dealt with all that shit. And seeing your ex-spouse still doing that after all of these years.
No growth. No, yeah.
Nothing. Of course you have apathy.
Yeah.
Because he's still the same gross human being that I met long ago.
She's like, I've grown. And he's still.
Like, where's the love? There was none.
But something that really pissed me off, and this is the last time we're going to mention her mother. Her mother and her sister went to the funeral, and like somebody from the press asked them, well, Tina's not here. Why are you here? They're like, well, just because she doesn't consider him family anymore doesn't mean we don't consider him family anymore. And I'm like, why? Why did you? I don't know. We have very different dynamics. I feel like my mother would have been like, absolutely.
That's the official Queens podcast statement.
That is how I feel about that. Anyway.
In 2009, after 50 years of performing, she finally retires.
Good for her.
After 50 years of performing. Let's give her a clap for 50 years of performing.
Cheers to 50 years.
So she hopefully Queen's podcast will be cheersing after
cheers
50 years. We'll be
years.
Old as fuck.
That's okay.
So she and Irwin settle into retirement in Switzerland, and after 27 years together, he proposes
again.
And this time she says yes.
Yay!
It's so cute.
I'm
so happy for
them. They have the most over the top wedding, which Nathan, if you want to click that link, I got some pictures. But I mean, what do you expect?
She
she wore.
I love it.
I'll make
I
a whole
it.
Post on Instagram just for pictures from her wedding, if y'all want. But she wore.
All you have to do is look at her face.
Look, she looks so happy.
That's all you have to do. She
and
looks
he looks
so
happy. She wore a black and green dress. She asked all the men to wear black and white tuxedos and asked all the women to wear white dresses because she didn't want anybody's outfits to clash with the decorations, which I it's so extra. I love it. So at 74 years old, she finally has her dream wedding. Look at her.
And she deserves it. Look at
everybody
this.
Deserves to be in love if they want to be. You know.
Yes. You know? And again, if you see these pictures, just look at her face.
And do you remember what her first wedding was with Ike and Tijuana? And then they went to the sex show.
Yeah, she finally got to have a man that appreciates her and
wants to
loves
give her,
her
and, she gets
and
to have
respects
her,
her.
Story, you know, like fairy tale wedding. Yeah.
Ugh, I love this for her. Sadly, though, just after a few months after their wedding, Tina has a stroke.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, this would be just her first health issue and like a long stream of issues.
Her health just nosedived right after.
Yeah, and I don't want to get into that because that's a big old bummer.
It's a big old bummer.
So let's just skim over that a little bit because it's a little traumatizing.
Yes. Tina at one point decides she doesn't like the medication she's on and she wants to take a more holistic route when it came to specifically the medication that she was on for some kidney issues she was having. And as a result, she suffered horrible kidney failure.
I remember this.
Yeah. Luckily, her husband was a match, and he gave her one of his kidneys.
Oh my God. Oh my God. I'm going to cry.
Because at this point, even though they've been together for almost 30 years, people were still being like, oh, he's just with her for her money and stuff. And it's no, if he was just with her for her money, he wouldn't be taking a literal organ out of his body and giving it to
her.
Let's
stop attacking it and just realize that her first husband was a gigantic asshole.
And her second one was a good
fucking
asshole.
And her second one literally gave his kidney to his wife. Like, she needed that.
They were
she needed that.
Clearly so in love.
I love that.
It didn't fix. Like, she still had health issues. And so Nathan and I were talking before we hit record about how in Switzerland you can opt to have assisted
suicide.
Yeah.
I mean, I hate to say it, but there's certain circumstances where people have ongoing health issues and they're just like, hey, I want to do this on my own terms. So no judgment for me. I wouldn't do it.
You know,
but I am not going to judge someone that does.
You know, you say you wouldn't do it. Who knows? If you get to a point in your life when it's, I have a terminal illness and it's either I suffer for another 5 years or I don't know.
Not my business.
Not my business.
Yes.
But she talks about that in her book, she talks about that they consulted with one of those agencies and how strict the vetting process was, because apparently there's like their biggest concern is, especially with somebody her status, is that you have people that are set to inherit your money trying to convince you.
So that's probably why the rumors of him coming around, he's trying to steal your money. It's
she opted not to do that, but she did look into that. And I thought that was really brave of her in her book to even admit that she looked into that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's
it's very vulnerable.
That's a hard decision to talk about with anybody. That's not easy.
I thought that was really brave of her to, just kind of just be like, I decided it wasn't the route for me, but she was just like, I think it's good that that's an option here in Switzerland, Anyway, that's a bummer.
It's a conversation. I'm glad she made the decision that she felt was right for her.
Yeah, for sure.
So Tina Turner passed away at her home in Switzerland with Erwin by her side at the age of 83.
Yeah.
So it's really sad, but she had plenty of time to prepare herself, make peace with it. Like, she had this amazing life she had this nice character arc where she started off in an abusive relationship and ended up with a really loving man.
Inspiration.
Can do it too.
And what a if you've ever watched her perform, just charismatic and just let's talk about her legacy.
Else I'm going to cry.
Where do we even fucking start? I didn't know this. The day that she died, or maybe the day after, at the changing of the guards, King Charles let them play Simply the Best. Simply the Best.
Burr, 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 burr.
How cool. When she passed away, it's pretty normal when someone of her status passes away that all these celebrities make tributes. But she was having world leaders. Barack Obama, Joe Biden, the Swiss president, King Charles. People were like, oh my God, she's an inspiration to so many people. I mean, her musical inspiration, but just her perseverance,
Yeah. She's living proof that you can come back from a really hard life, take control, build yourself up, get rid of that man, and become legendary. Not just legendary, but the most legendary performer.
Queen of rock and roll. And you know what, Nathan? She's simply the best! Oh my goodness, what an amazing life. Okay, well, that's what we're going to leave Tina Turner. We hope y'all enjoyed this series.
Love you guys.
Cheers, bitches.
Hello everyone, it's Takuya here.
And I'm Gabby.
And we are the hosts of History of Everything, a podcast which you can probably guess by the name it's about everything. Do you want to know why people thought potatoes were evil and would give you syphilis? Are you curious about all the stories of the terrible and stupid ways that people have kicked the bucket over the years? Do you want to hear tales about all of the different badasses of history and the lives that they had brought to life? Well, if so, then look no further. History of Everything is just the right podcast for you. It's available on Spotify, Pandora, and anywhere else that you get your podcast from. Join us for some fun and just see how weird and wacky history can be.